ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We're reading from Canto 4, Chapter 30, entitled The Activities of the Prachetas, Text 45. Tatogni Maruto Rajan. Tatogni Maruto Rajan. Amunchan Mukato Murusha. Amunchan Mukato Rusha Mahinir Virudham Kartum Mahinir Virudham Kartum Samvartaka Ivatyatne Samvartaka Ivatyaye Tata. Thereafter, Agni, fire, Marutau, and air, Rajan, O king, Amunchan, they emitted, Mukataha, from their mouths, yeah. Rusha, out of anger. Mahim, the earth. Nirvirudham, treeless. Kartum, to make. Samvartaka, the fire of devastation, yes. Iva, Eva is certainly Iva, also yeah. Well, like also. Atyaye, at the time of devastation. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. My dear king, at the time of devastation, Lord Shiva emits fire and air from his mouth out of anger. To make the surface of the earth completely treeless, the Prachetas also emitted fire and air from their mouths. And purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, Vidura is addressed as Rajan, which means O King. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that a dhira never becomes angry because he is always situated in devotional service. Advanced devotees can control their senses, therefore a devotee can be addressed as Rajan. A king controls and rules in various ways among citizens. Similarly, one who can control his senses is the king of his senses. He is a swami or goswami. The swamis and goswamis are therefore sometimes addressed as maharaj or king. The translation again. My dear king, at the time of devastation, Lord Shiva emits fire and air from his mouth out of anger. To make the surface of the earth completely treeless, the Prachetas also emitted fire and air from their mouths. Omagyanti Mirandhasya Gyananjana Chavakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadatara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I would like to elaborate on these two points that Prabhupada brings out in the purport, that of sense control or sacrifice of a devotee versus sense enjoyment. And then also the role of a king or of a ruler and some of the responsibilities that are involved in it. Now just putting this verse in context here, just imagine the scene. There's the Prachetas, who are the 10 sons of King Prachinabarishad, and they have just performed tremendous austerities under the water. So for thousands of years, they've been meditating underwater. Now, in the meantime, King Prachinabarishad, he was the ruler of the earth, and he has been preached to by Narada Muni to leave and go to the forest and renounce his kingdom. So he has gone, and in the meantime, what happens, because there is no ruler or no organization, no government, the trees take over. There's a revolutioning happening, and here we have what's happening here is the trees take over, and it's described also in the previous verses that, specifically in the previous verse, that the trees had covered all the earth, all of nature, and you couldn't even see the sky. It said that the access to the heavenly planets was blocked. So the trees were so high, and they would cover everything, so you couldn't even look through the sky. You wouldn't even be able to see any sunshine or anything. So the trees started a revolution. They just took over, and as a result of that, there was no land for agriculture. There was no pasturing grounds for the cows, which means there was no food for people to live. So there was no means for survival for people. So now the Prachetas come out of their meditation for thousands of years, and what do they see? They see the situation. And it was like, okay, Hare Krishna, now we got to do something about this. So they get angry for the sake of the pastime. They have to do something. They have to destroy all these trees so that they can, that again the people can be protected and can get some food. So here also the importance of good management is pointed out. Even the Prachetas, when they were meditating underwater, actually they got a darshan of Krishna. So for them, it wasn't, they couldn't care less if there was trees everywhere or not. They were just sitting underwater for thousands of years. So even in a situation where there was trees, I mean, they could have been perfectly happy. So for them, there was no personal need to destroy all these trees. They could have lived happily with the trees. I mean, for somebody who can survive underwater, I mean, that's, you know, trees are not a problem. So, but then they got the direct order of the Lord to take care of the citizens, to take over the kingdom, and to protect the citizens. So then one of the responsibilities of a good leader is to not just to show compassion, but also to show justice. And so if the people that are under one's care are in danger, then one has to protect the aggressors. Attack the aggressors. Everyone has to protect the citizens. So, because of the order of the Supreme Lord, they have then taken on the responsibility to destroy the trees. And it's compared here to the fire of devastation of Lord Shiva. So Shiva, as we know, he gets quite angry at the end of creation to destroy the whole universe. And so it's compared, their state is compared, their emotional state is compared to that of Shiva when he's destroying the universe. So we can understand there's quite some intensity there. And also these 10 Prachetas, they could destroy the whole, like all of these trees, simply by the fire that came out of their mouth. So there was, you know, they had to exhibit quite some anger. And also we see that in previous examples of other devotees who've used anger in the service of the Lord. For instance, Hanuman, he has destroyed basically almost the entire city of Lanka. He set the Ashoka Gardens on fire. And then he said, okay, I'm not just going to destroy all of that because I'm just an insignificant servant of the Lord. If he comes, he can do the rest. And then you see what Lord Ramchandra can do. He told that to Ravana. And also we have Arjuna as another example, who was on the order of Krishna, who had to engage in the battle of Kurukshetra. And if you can imagine, if you're on the battlefield, you need to be angry in order to fight. Otherwise, but you know, you can't just be all in like peace and contentment and satisfaction and try to fight a battle as a Kshatriya. You need to be enraged. You need to be an angry, exhibit some anger to be able to fight a war, and especially the biggest war in history. So there's devotees who have been using their anger in the service of the Lord, and specifically, you see, like in management, to protect the devotees, to protect the citizens. That's being used here. Of course, we have to understand that principle very carefully, and not misuse that, because it was under the direct order of the Supreme Lord. They had followed the instructions of Lord Shiva, and because of that, they could understand the Lord, they could realize the Lord, they had a direct darshan of Krishna, and then he gave them the instruction to destroy the, or to protect, to take over the kingdom, to destroy the kingdom. And Vidura, interestingly, in this verse, Prabhupada points out this, that Vidura in this verse is addressed as a king, as a maharaj. Now, if you look at the history of Vidura, he was actually born as a shudra. So he's not actually in a position of a king. And then also his main qualification was that he was thoroughly honest. Vidura, if you remember the story of Dhritarashtra and how he told Dhritarashtra, actually, you're... He was insulting Dhritarashtra that he's living off the leftovers, you know, like a dog, he's living off the leftovers from his son, Duryodhana, because he kept supporting Duryodhana in his attempts to defeat the Pandavas, or to throw over the Pandavas, because Duryodhana wanted to take over the kingdom. So Vidura, he told Dhritarashtra at some point, hey, you know, you have to stop that. And then so Vidura, as a result of that, was kicked out of the kingdom. So even now, socially, being a shudra, being kicked out of his house, his kingdom, or the kingdom of his family, just wandering around for years and years to come, he didn't really have anything. Like, he didn't have anything materially. So still, he's being addressed as a king here, and then Prabhupada explains why is he addressed as a king, because he's able to control his senses. And somebody who's able to control his senses is also referred to as Maharaj. That's why we also sometimes address our sannyasis as Maharaj. Or Swami means also the master of the senses, or Goswami, the master of the senses. So in that way, Vidura was, we can explain why Vidura was being addressed here as a king. Also, Rupa Goswami, in his Nectar of Instruction, he says, the very first instruction that he gives is Vachavegam Manasakrodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udarupasta Vegam. So you have somebody who's in a position of a spiritual guide or spiritual master has to be able to control all these six urges. The urge of the speech, the urge of the mind, anger, belly, tongue, and the genitals. So in that way, a devotee is considered to be a Goswami or a Maharaj. And I think it's also interesting that this has been, Vidura is being addressed here as a king as Maharaj, when he's talking about the Pracheta is getting angry or apparently exhibiting anger, which I think is also significant because it means, again, that they didn't exhibit their anger because of personal motivations. They weren't envious, or they didn't have their desires unfulfilled. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that unfulfilled lust leads to anger. And usually in the material world we see that when we get angry, it's because we have desires that are not fulfilled. Or something is disturbing us, something doesn't go the way we want it to go, we have a certain way of controlling our environment and it doesn't work, we can't be the controllers, the enjoyers of what happens around us. So as a result of that, we get angry. But that's not following Vachavegam Manasakrodha Vegam, that's giving in to one's desires, to one's anger. And here on the contrary, the Prachetas, they exhibit this anger for the service of the Lord. They don't, as I said already, they're not selfishly motivated here. So I thought it was an interesting connection here that Vidura is being addressed here also as a Maharaj, exactly at the point when the Prachetas burn down the trees. Also, I wanted to say a few things about Madhvacharya, because it's Madhvacharya's disappearance day today. And one thing that came to mind immediately was we see here the Prachetas, they were following Shiva, and Shiva has his own sampradaya, the Rudra sampradaya. And by following in the footsteps of a great acharya, they could achieve perfection. So in a similar way, we are in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya sampradaya. So if we can hear and glorify and follow in the footsteps of our acharyas, we can also similarly attain perfection in a similar way as the Prachetas did, even though our process may be slightly differently. I mean, the process is the same, we glorify Krishna, but then Lord Chaitanya, who comes in the line of Lord Brahma and Lord and Madhva Acharya, he gave us the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So when we chant the Hare Krishna mantra, then we can attain similar perfections as the Prachetas. And just a few things here about Madhva, just about Madhva's life. Madhva was born in 1238 in South India. He was born in a village near Udupi, I think about 8 miles southeast of Udupi. And I think Mahendra would probably be a good person to see pictures from there. He was there recently. He spent some time there. And so Madhvacharya, he was known even as a child as somebody who could perform a lot of miracles and a lot of like superhuman feats. When he was 5 years old, there's a story where there was a snake in the village around, and then when he was 5 years old, he could kill the snake just by touching it with his toe. And then sometimes it was described that he would just wander off for hours and hours, and his mother was very disturbed, and she was very anxious. And soon, when she called him, he would just jump, make a big jump, and he would land again just in front of his mother, even though he would just climb a mountain. So he had these like superhuman powers. And then also one day, he was a little bit older, I think 7 or 8. His father was in debt. And he overheard a conversation between his father and the debt collector. And so the debt collector said, "Okay, I'm not going to leave this house until you give me back my debts." And the father was like, "Sorry, and I cannot pay. I don't have the money." And so little Madhva, Vasudev, as he was called then, Vasu, little Vasu, he noticed the conversation, and then he went to a tree, a tamarind tree, and he collected the seeds, and then he brought the tamarind seeds to the tax collector, and he's like, "Here, you take the tamarind seeds, and then you're good, you're fine." And then the tax collector was, "Oh yeah, he's a little boy, what does he know?" And you know, he takes the seeds, and then when he opens his hands, then he sees that these seeds have been turned into gold coins. And so then in that way he was helping his family. And then also when he was 12 years old, he took sannyas. And he was asking his mother for blessings to take sannyas. But of course, which mother would give a boy like that the blessings to take sannyas? So she said, no, I cannot give my only son away. And then he prayed, "Okay, well, if she doesn't want to give her only son away, then maybe if I get a brother, then I can go. Then she can have him and I can go." And so he prayed and prayed that he gets a brother. And then when he was 12, finally he gets a brother. And he was in a movie. Some of you maybe have seen this movie. It's kind of this depicted in a nice way, that he stands on the shore and then he sees his mother is giving birth. And then as soon as he sees it's a son, then he jumps off and he leaves, and understanding that his mother have given him blessings in an indirect way. So then he goes to the school of his guru, Achyuta Preksha. Yeah. And he's an impersonalist or a Mayavadi sannyasi from the Sringeri Math. And so it's also explained in the Madhva Vijaya, his commentary, or his biography, that he's keeps defeating his guru when they study the Vedanta and when they study Shankara's philosophy, then he keeps defeating the points, and so eventually he starts off preaching his own philosophy, his Vaishnava Vedanta, and he also goes to Bhadrik Ashram, to the Himalayas, and meets Vyasadeva there, and it's also quite a significant point because there he presents his Bhagavad Gita commentary, and Vyasadeva he gives the blessings, and he said, "Yes, this is good. Keep going." So then he comes back, finishes his Gita commentary, and then he writes a second Bhagavad Gita commentary later on. And I think we have one available in English, if I'm not mistaken. There's only one, I think. I'm not sure if both are translated. He keeps going on different preaching tours, but he's presenting his Vaishnava Vedanta. His Vaishnava doctrine. And that's quite significant because at that time there was the prevailing interpretation of the Vedanta Sutras was that of Shankara. So there was a lot of impersonalism going on at that time. So Madhvacharya's main mission really was to defeat Mayavad philosophy, and he was so strong on that. That's why his system is also called Dvaita Vedanta. So it's Dvaitavad. Like whatever he does is dual. Like he doesn't accept any even a slight tinge of impersonalism. Like he even criticized Ramanuja for establishing Vishishta Advaita, which is a qualified monism. Even he says that's still too close to monism. No, we have to really establish a clear distinction between the Lord and the living entities, between the living entities amongst each other, between the material elements and between the living entities and the material elements. So there's these five differences that he very clearly pointed out. So this was Madhvacharya's greatest contribution, but which he still glorified. And I think I've heard once from a, even was it a Madhva follower or somebody who was in contact with the Madhvas, the followers of Madhvacharya, even to this day, when in Gurukul, the boys, when they grow up, when they go and pass stool, they even chant a mantra for Shankaracharya, to really kind of keep that impression in their mind that Shankaracharya's philosophy against Shankaracharya's philosophy is really something that we have to defeat, and we have to make clear that's something that we don't want in our lives. I don't know how authoritative that is, but it's something that I've heard from him. Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Ki. So Madhvacharya's goal was to establish the devotional service is the highest means, and that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, via his eternal servants, that worshipping Krishna through pure devotional service is the best means. And then also because today is his disappearance day, the way how Madhvacharya left this world was described in Madhva Vijay, his biography, is that he was lecturing on the Aitareya Upanishad. In some versions I've read it, he was lecturing on the Aitareya Upanishad, and another one it said he was writing a commentary, or he was speaking a commentary on the Aitareya Upanishad. Well, it's the same, I guess. So this was apparently his favorite Upanishad. He was 80 years old, and he was lecturing on that. And then he just leaves his body. And I was just wanting to read some of the things that the demigods, apparently the demigods, they come and they chant prayers in glorification of Madhvacharya. And I was just wanting to read those, if you don't mind. It's just one page. Since today is the day to glorify Madhva Acharya. And so the demigods, they praise Madhva and they say, "All glories to you, O Vayu, O Lord who enlivens the jivas." So Madhva Acharya, according to the followers of Madhva, he is considered to be an expansion or an incarnation of Vayu. And Vayu had three incarnations. The first one was Hanuman, then he came again as Bhima, and then again he came as Madhva. So these are the three incarnation of Vayu. "And all glories to you who is dear to Lord Ram, All glories to you, O most powerful one, Bhimasena. Salutations to you. O Madhva, who has saved us all from the bad Kali Yuga philosophies, all glories to you. So here, saving us from the bad Kali Yuga philosophies, mainly referring to Shankara's Advaita Vedanta, but also to Buddhism. He defeated the Buddhists, Buddhist theories, and all, like, there was other atheistic philosophies, the Charvakas, and different traditions that were materialistic, like that. And also he was establishing the true meaning of the Vedas. He was explaining the Rig Veda, for instance, in a way that all the demigods that are being praised in the Vedas, that they are all different names of Vishnu. So he established that for the smarta brahmanas who were just engaged in performing like ritualistic sacrifices. He established, okay, actually all these sacrifices for Agni and for Rudra and all these different people that are mentioned there, they're actually just different names of Vishnu. So all these sacrifices are meant to be performed for the pleasure of Vishnu. And then they continue. You who are adorned with 32 and more auspicious signs, all glories to you, all glories to you. O preceptor, Purnapragya, you have dispelled the darkness of the wicked Shastras by the presentation of Vyasa's true rendition of Vedanta Sutra, and your own parrot-like embellishment, so nectarian, all glories to you, all glories to you. You have expounded the truths about the pure personalistic forms of Lord Narayan, all glories to you, all glories to you. You who have conquered the 14 worlds by your attractive, pure Vaishnava qualities, all glories to you, all glories to you. By your kindness, please always be our preceptor and protector. O Srivayu, who are the Lord of the Jivas and the senses, you have come to the earth for the good benefit of the virtuous people. You have given a wealth of knowledge. Now we salute you. Salutations unto you. All glories to you. You are eternally dear to Lord Ram, O Hanuman of great devotion. Salutations again and again to you. So you know, you see they go on and on glorifying Madhva and his different characteristics. O most powerful, one who is so dear to Lord Yadava Krishna, O Bhimasena, salutations repeatedly unto you. O pleaser of the three worlds, bestower of sweet association to those who are in need of association. O Madhva Muni, Sri Ananda Tirtha, Bhagavat Pad, victory to you, victory to you. This is from Madhva Vijay. And I just want to finish off with one more story where he finds the Udupi Krishna deity. He's the main deity that's being worshipped in the by the Madhva followers. And one day Madhva was sitting on the ocean and he could see that there was a boat coming from Dwaraka. And the boat had some problems. And the boatsman, he had some problems. And so Madhva could help that person sort of to come to the shore safely, and so he helped the boatsman. And then the boatsman was asking, oh, can I give you something? And then he was carrying Gopichandan or Tilak from Dwaraka to the south. And then he said, Madhva said, okay, you know, I take a chunk of Gopichandan, of Tilak, no problem. And so he gave him, broke off a chunk, and as he broke off a chunk of Gopichandan, there was a Balaram deity in the Tilak. And so it's described that this Tilak comes from Dwaraka, a place where Rukmini had worshipped Krishna Balaram deities. And they were actually manufactured or carved by Vishwakarma and given to Rukmini at the time when Krishna was still present, so that she could still have a deity of Krishna and Balaram. And so he finds his Balaram deity first, and then he established him on the shore there, on the beach. There's still a temple, it's still there today, I think. And then he brings this whole other chunk of Gopichandan home to Udupi. And as they break off the chandan, he sees that there's the Krishna deity also. So he finds these really old, beautiful Krishna Balaram deities, and then he establishes this Udupi Krishna deity, which is said to be 5,000 years old. And he's holding a stick and something to eat in his hands. So he can still see that there's, if you see pictures of the deity, I mean, there's still, he still holds a stick and then he has his hand like this. So, Okay, any comments, questions, corrections? I was hoping the question wouldn't come up. Mataji was asking if I can say something more on Madhva defeating his guru, which we don't really hear so often. And it's the first principle in devotional service that you accept the lotus feet of a spiritual master, you follow the instructions, you get initiation. Rupa Goswami describes the whole process. But of course, Madhvacharya, he had a personal understanding of the Lord. And so if you have a guru who's teaching impersonalist philosophy, then this is one of the reasons why you can reject the spiritual master. And it's also from the scriptures. So Madhvacharya, he had a purpose and a mission. And actually, he considered Vyasadeva his spiritual master. It's just his spiritual master then, where he took sannyas from, was in the Sringeri Math, in Shankaracharya's line. And maybe somebody else wants to say something more on that. So one of the reasons why we can reject the spiritual master is if the spiritual master starts to preach Mayavad philosophy. That's what we should reject. But yes, like what type of sadhana do they have? Yeah, and if you wrote your BA thesis on it and you don't know it, then that. And then you expect. How can I say more than Krishna Kshetra Prabhu? I don't know. I mean, I know they have a lot of bhajans too. Like when I was in South India, I've just, you know, in Bangladesh, there's one of the centers for the Madhvas in Bangladesh. In what's the city in South India? No. There's a big temple also. Bangalore, yes, thank you. In Bangalore. It's also a big center for the Madhvas, and we've met some of the Madhva acharyas there, and the main thing that they do is just deity worship and bhajans. This is what I saw, but I don't know if they chant any japa or any like anything like that. I don't know. I wouldn't be able to say the name. Well, we understand that Vyasadeva is still living in the Himalayas, that he's still around somewhere. You may need some extra central abilities to perceive the darshan of Vyasadeva, but yeah, it's described that Madhva saw Vyasadeva. Okay. Nice. Well, I haven't heard the Shilas, but I've heard about the instructions. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. Rupa Goswami, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he compares the desire for liberation and for sense enjoyment. Also, he compares that to ghosts and witches. So actually, if you have the desire for liberation and also for sense gratification, it will impede our devotional service, and we won't be able to focus on cultivating our desire to serve Krishna unmotivatedly. And also it's described that for a devotee, then bhakti and mukti, they stand with folded hands at the door of the devotee wanting to serve him. So if we cultivate our desire to serve Krishna unmotivatedly and we don't aspire for liberation, and especially in Nectar of Devotion, the first 19 chapters, there's so many references actually pointing out that we shouldn't cultivate that desire. Even the Anyabhilasha Shunyam verse, the definition of pure devotional service, is not covered. Devotional service is not covered by a desire for jnana or karma or liberation, fruitive results. It's free from any other desires other than simply just to serve the Lord. So for devotees, we understand that we don't want to cultivate those desires. And if it's helpful for us in our service, then Krishna is going to give it to us. We can have that faith. And if certain insights, certain realizations, if Krishna thinks they're helpful in our service, then he can give them to us. If he thinks it's distracting or if it's not helpful in any way, then he's not going to give it. And this is the mood of a devotee. We just depend on whatever Gopinath wants us to know, whatever wants us to perceive, to realize. Even a devotee doesn't even ask for the direct vision, direct darshan of the Lord. Because we understand that if we want to serve Krishna, then it's better if he wants to see us. And then if he has a desire to see us, then who can stop him? So, and why does it take longer for some devotees? Because maybe some of us still have more material desires, maybe some more material aspirations. And then to the extent that we have material aspirations, we can't focus on our spiritual on our desire to serve Krishna. And then, also Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, Krishna says with intense devotional service, you should worship me. So if the intensity isn't there, then naturally it'll go slower. Krishna just has a different plan for different people. To say something. But do you have some other thoughts? Nectar of Devotion, first 19 chapters. Rupa Goswami, over and over again, he brings it up that we don't want liberation, and if it comes, it comes. But we're not asking for it, like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also more blissful to actually cultivate your relationship with Krishna, because you have a reciprocation with Krishna on a transcendental level. So to aspire for Brahman realization, or like it's kind of, it stops with the shanti, kind of a peaceful kind of like freedom from suffering, which is, I guess, for us a nice idea. It's struggling in the material world, but also here the Prachetas, they have performed so many sacrifices in the meditation that as soon as they got the darshan of the Lord, as soon as they had interactions with the Lord, they forgot all of that. And they said, okay, this is actually the perfection. We don't need anything else. Just let our sacrifices be an offering for your pleasure. And that's the perfection of our lives. So this is real sense gratification, like getting the darshan of the Lord, serving the Lord, our spiritual senses of our real self. Maybe, was this the one where is this the incident when he sees the ship coming from Dwarka? No, there was some other. Somebody else remembers? Shri Mad Bhattacharya ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Thank you very much.